Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to the Raiders Insider Podcast on NBCSportsCalifornia.com. Introducing your host, Oakland Raiders Insider, Scott Baer.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 4 of the Raiders Insider Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Baer, and with me, as she is every week, is my pal, Fallon
Smith.
Yeah,
you said it. You said it this time.
I didn't wait for the intro or nothing. And we're, as we do every week, we're going to kind of transition from, you know, what happened last week against Washington and what will or needs to happen coming up against Denver, and that's going to happen. And then after that, we're going to have an exclusive one-on-one interview with undrafted rookie Nicholas Morrow, a linebacker who played 42 snaps last week, has been very good in coverage, and is the next Jalen Richard success story. The guy comes out of Greenville College, middle of nowhere, and has turned something, a small opportunity, into something big. I love those types of stories. And if he's anything like Jalen as far as being a talker, it should be a good interview. Fallon, I don't know how much fans really want to rehash a 27-10 loss to Washington at FedEx Field that really felt like 48-10. Nothing went right for the Raiders, and they left being perfectly honest about the fact that they got their butt kicked.
Man, Scott, apparently nobody knows anything about football, right? Because what the heck was that? If I were to put money on this game, I'd be broke, because nobody could tell me that the Raiders were going to get whooped. Lose maybe a close game. Okay, I would have partially believed that, but whooped? And not only whooped, the offense looked atrocious, non-existent. Yeah. I mean, 0-for-11 on third down. Are you kidding me?
Amazing stat.
I mean, seriously, if you would have told me that Derek Carr would be and company would be 0-11 on third down, I'd say, yeah, right. Shut up. You know what I mean? But they got killed. They got killed in the trenches. Their offensive line got bullied by their front four. I mean, they had a 4-man rush, and that's it all game. And they still got killed. The pocket collapsed. Carr was sacked 4 times. And then defense, obviously, they allowed Vernon Davis to resurrect his career. Just kidding.
Vernon Davis, wow. Imagine if Jordan Reed had played. What would that have been like? But yeah, I mean, the craziest part is all those things that you're listing off, the quarterback troubles, the offensive line struggling, wide receivers, I'm sure that we're going to get to those guys as well.
Yeah.
Those are all Raiders' strengths. Yeah. Those aren't weaknesses being exposed. Those are major things that really didn't go right. And it really seemed, even from the beginning, that they were just off. And it wasn't because Derek Carr threw a pick on that second play. It was kind of a cumulative thing where the defense didn't play so bad. But in the first 4 series, the offense goes interception, 3 and out, 3 and out. Interception, and that really set the tone for the entire game. The offense never got going. This is a unit that was scoring 35 points per game in the 2 games beforehand, and I think it's left people reaching for answers, right? Like, they want to try to figure out what happened to this team that really controlled and dominated 2 teams before that, regardless of competition. I think it left people grasping for, all right, is this team not as good as we thought it was? Did one national anthem protest really take them off their game, which I think is a little bit of hogwash, by the way? Or, you know, like, they keep grasping at straws, like, what happened to this team and everything that we thought about it?
Well, that's a good question, and part of me thinks it's a combination of a lot of things, and one of them, in my opinion, may be the fact that they were drinking their own Kool-Aid a little bit, maybe. You know what I mean?
That's possible,
And everybody was saying how, you know, we were asked if this could be a trap game before Denver. And we're like, no, no, this is, you know, they have good leaders on their team. Jack Del Rio is a good leader of men. Yeah, you know, Khalil and Derek won't let that happen. But honestly, what the heck was that? And they were not ready. They were not ready from start to finish. They got killed from start to finish. But what I would say is, what was a little weird, I didn't think that the team just looked right from the beginning. Like, even during the national anthem, I mean, obviously it was very powerful and it was very emotional, and I love that they did that. But I'm not trying to bash Derek Carr in any way at all, but I thought it was just weird that he wasn't with his offensive line guys or, like, linking arms with them. He was by himself in the back, and I know he was praying, which is awesome. But I just thought it was just kind of a weird scene. You know what I mean? And then
yeah, definitely. Yeah, and it was strange because you see Lee Smith, who was clearly adamant about standing, and he was next to Jalen Richard, and he put a hand on his shoulder, another sign of unity. But yeah, it was weird to see Derek kind of off in the back like
and
that.
Obviously people are not going to say, you know, in the locker room, those guys are not going to say, oh yeah, we're divided. No way. And I'm not saying that they are either, but I don't know if there was some talk, you know, obviously there was talk that they were going to stay in, you know, and I think that maybe they got a little distracted, but point blank period, they got their butts whooped. You know, the Redskins get paid too. And honestly, I definitely think the Redskins came with a little extra something. You heard from Norman after the game, but you know, maybe they, I guarantee you that the coaches played Marshawn Lynch dancing on the sideline with them during the week. I think that yeah, is a given. And that was a huge motivational factor for them. And they're like, oh, we're not going to get, you know, they're not going to be doing that here. And they came to play, and the Raiders weren't ready for it. They got punched. They got knocked out, you know, from the get, and they never got back up.
Yeah. And I think that's a, worthy transition point. Right now, I mean, we can slog through every stat, and I think that you and I have both said it well, that they got their butts kicked. Now, I think, is the real test, because if you look at most teams around the NFL, except the Patriots in certain years or whatever, most teams, even the good ones, they get beat sometimes, and it's not pretty, and it's uncharacteristic. Mm-hmm. But what good teams don't do is they don't
let it happen again.
Exactly. Yes, they have to rebound well. And Jack Del Rio has been saying all week that that Washington loss only counts as one. Well, it only counts as one if your hangover doesn't last through the next week, and if they can transition and get motivated. And I'm sure they would love to have, you know, the Colts on the schedule next, right? Or some easy team where they could get right. Well, they don't have that opportunity. They have a much better than expected Denver Broncos team with a defense and a secondary, especially. You brought up Josh Norman, and Washington safety DJ Swearinger took some shots at Marshawn and Amari Cooper, and the Denver Broncos secondary, they don't lack for confidence. Oh. They don't lack for trash talk. And there is a bit of a history between them and the Raiders skill players, so it sets up for an interesting, very difficult, and challenging rebound game. And I think it's about, all right, well, the Raiders' talented position groups, the ones that struggled against Washington, need to lead this group into Mile High and really show some resolve.
Well, I'm really impressed that you didn't go there real quick. You didn't go to the Aqib Talib and Michael Crabtree pulling on the chain. I thought you were going to go there right from the jump, but okay, you left that for me.
I did. I thought that let you start with that. Right. I mean, that is a juicy detail.
No, that's very nice. I mean, let's hope that Crabtree is 100%. Nothing's wrong with his lungs or his chest or whatever. I mean, obviously, he's not going to be 100%. No one is. But at least hopefully he's healthy to play, because you want to see them, you know, go at it again. And after Michael Crabtree got his butt whooped last week, you best believe that he wants to come back, and he can't have another bad performance like that. You know what
I mean? And he's a really prideful guy, so he's going to want to show up, especially after a week where so many people said so many kind of mean-spirited stuff about him, stuff that I'm not even sure is true. So
I mean, all that Josh Norman stuff was just so odd, because I think that he made that up in his head or something, because Amari Cooper is not a trash talker, and you heard today he said that he didn't say anything. So who knows, but I'm going to take Cooper's side on this. But as far as Crabtree goes, we know that he likes to talk a little bit, you know.
He sure does.
He likes to talk a little bit. We know that in the past he was with the 49ers. However, he needs to now, you know, put his money where his mouth is, and that's going to be this Sunday in Denver. And I think it's going to be fun to see him and, you know, Tlaib go at it. But, I mean, you got to give it to Tlaib. He's a good dang player. Remember, oh, I think it was the first game of the season, or was it the second game of the season, he took back a pick six for 103 yards. Lord Jesus.
Yeah.
Hopefully Derek Carr doesn't have a bad day again.
Yeah, and wide receivers are very dependent on their quarterback. And if we're looking at, if we're trying to look forward here and see signs of maybe future trouble, I still don't think that the quarterback is one. He talked some Wednesday afternoon, that's this afternoon, earlier today, just so people know. He talked a bit about pressing, and at times he feels like he needs to put the team on his back. And when he does that, he gets a little too Favre-like, I think, for the team's taste and really for his own taste when he goes back and watches tape. And he said that a couple different times in his press conference, just that I really have to be mindful of not trying to put it all on my back or not trying to do something Herculean or out of character, because while nobody likes 0 for 11 on third down or three and outs, that sounds like sweet poetry compared to a poorly timed interception that could change the game and things that he doesn't do and is uncharacteristic for him. At the same time, he didn't play the last time in Denver, but the Raiders' offense has never been great in the Mile High City. They've won there thanks to Khalil Mack, but the offense has never been great. And that defense can really be tough on opposing teams. So I think I've already said that the talent and the resolve for the offensive line is there to rebound. What do you expect out of number four, their signal caller, after maybe one of his worst games as a pro?
Yeah, I don't really see him having back-to-back off weeks. But what I will say this is, you know, maybe him not pressing is not what was concerning. I think what was most concerning is just that he looked rattled all game, right?
Yeah.
He looked very uncomfortable all game. Well, guess what? Denver's defense is going to make you uncomfortable.
That's what they do.
That's what they do. So it's going to be one in the trenches, like coaches always like to say. It's going to be one up front. The offensive line has to do a better job of protecting Carr. I mean, the thing about what happened last week is Carr had nowhere to go. When the pocket was collapsing, it's not like he could scramble out of the pocket. The way that the pocket collapsed, it was all random. It was like in a big circle.
Yeah, he was not being flushed. You're right.
No.
He was being surrounded. And he's been sacked four times on six other occasions, or four times at least, six other times. So it's a very rare thing, and it hasn't happened since this offensive line that we see as constructed now with, you know, Jackson, Osemele, Hudson, and Donald Penn all playing at the same time. So I'm sure that was foreign to him. But you're right. It just it seemed like they were out of sync. I think at times the Raiders saw things schematically that they didn't expect and were out of sorts in making those types of adjustments. And you can't be out of sorts against this Denver defense. Uh-uh. We've talked so much about Tlaib and Chris Harris and Roby in that secondary. Well, Von Miller is as quick an edge rusher, as bendable and dangerous an edge rusher as there is, and definitely as dangerous this side of Khalil Mack.
Yep.
So it's going to be a major test for that front, because if their pass rush is kicking, and oh, by the way, they have the number one run defense in the entire NFL. So for all these things, it isn't necessarily the right time to get, you know, the right team to get right against, but this is an AFC West, Fallon, and now we've seen the Chiefs are one of two undefeated teams. The Broncos can play. The Chargers are in. They did not have the start that they wanted in Los Angeles. But how important is it to get some early AFC West wins? They ultimately want to win this division.
Yep.
And it starts with victories within it.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I mean, obviously, every divisional game is a big game. So it doesn't matter when it's played. However, this is just kind of ironic that both of them happen to have really bad weeks at the same time, and now they're both going to play each other to try and bounce back, which for the Raiders doesn't really help that they're playing on the road in that, you know, elevation where it's a little harder to breathe. However, as you know, the Raiders, you know, they play okay there. Last year, when they played in January, was it January 1st? That's when Carr was hurt. So that was what, 24-6. They had, don't count that game. No. But I remember the year before when they finished the season there, it was the Khalil Mack monster game. So they're going to need help from the defense. I think that this, what's going to be huge for the Raiders in this game is establishing the run and being extremely physical up front. Because as you saw, the Redskins, Lord, they couldn't even, everyone's like, oh, why didn't they run the ball more? When they ran the ball, they had, oh my goodness, I saw Marshawn Lynch get rocked like I've never seen Marshawn Lynch get rocked. And then when you're playing from behind, you obviously can't run the football. So establishing the run early, that's going to be huge. And I think Marshawn, after having a terrible week, oh, he's going to be violent this week for sure. And I'm sure that all of the guys, think about this. I mean, if I was a player, I would want to burn the tape, you know, never even watch that tape because it was so embarrassing. However, like, it was hard for me to watch it twice. I watched it maybe 1.5 times. I stopped. Oh, my goodness. It was so bad. I was getting, like, frustrated watching the game back. But just imagine being a player. If I was Jack Taylor, I would have went through every single play just so they saw how awful it was. Because, honestly, you're only going to learn to see what you did wrong, right? You got to watch the tape. Even though it's just a little, in my opinion, it was an anomaly, and these types of games are not going to, you know, come from the Oakland Raiders all the time. I mean, this is one of those games where, you know, okay, once a year you get a crappy game like this. Cool. But I think they needed to learn from the tape, and hopefully that these guys are like, all right, y'all, this is it. This was embarrassing, and they're going to show up. You don't, and, you know, obviously it was an inopportune time to not show up on prime time. But, you know, you got a chance on Sunday to bounce back and get back on the right track. Because if you come back to Oakland against the Ravens 2-2, it doesn't look as good as 3-1. However, I'm not going to say the season will be over, but you know, you're back on track if you're 3-1 heading into that Ravens game.
Yeah, and it's weird because 2-2 isn't terrible, but with the expectations they had in starting 2-0, everything sort of shifts, and what was good last year is no longer acceptable. And I do agree with you in getting Marshawn going. I'm not sure maybe he's going to have breakaway speed to score 70-yard touchdowns, but just to establish that steady churning of yards to keep the team on schedule is going to be important to get him established, especially early on. Somebody who also provides a heightened level of physicality and nastiness, who was really absent against Washington, was left guard Kelechi Osemele. Yeah. He allowed 0 sacks all last year. He allowed 2 in one game. And his run blocking wasn't terribly great. He got beat some up front. And to a guy like that who prides himself on pancaking people on every play, he didn't like that. He's not going to like it. And it's a type of thing where, yeah, this might be the best run defense, but if you consider yourself talented, if Von Miller called the Raiders the best offensive line in football and he's already played Dallas, then the offensive line, you're right, and Marshawn Lynch need to set a tone offensively to get things turned around. And then just kind of a last question here as we wrap this thing up and head towards the Nicholas Morrow interview. Who is your kind of player to watch or your key player on the defensive side as we head towards Sunday's game?
Well, good Lord, there could be a million people. However, well, not a million. Mm-hmm. However, one person in mind who I want to step up, who needs to step up, is the guy on the other side of Khalil Mack. Off the edge, Bruce Irvin. Because Bruce, homie, we love you. However, he got killed. I was looking back at the tape. He couldn't do a thing. I think he maybe had a pressure or two. I didn't really look at the stats, to be honest with you, because the game was so ugly.
He had zero pressures.
Oh, he had zero pressures. Oh, well, never mind. I was giving him too much credit. But he was getting killed. And honestly, Khalil Mack cannot do it by himself. The person I was super impressed with was Corey James. And, of course, Kowser, in his limited reps, you know, he had recovered a fumble. Off court. Corey James made a heck of a play there when he hit the ball out. But my point is, Khalil Mack needs some help on the other side. And that's the only way that there's going to be interior pressure. We got to get help from all sides. And so I'm looking for Bruce to step it up because, quite honestly, he has been very quiet through these first 3 weeks.
Yeah, and I'm sure he would say the same thing, that his goal is always to hit double-digit sacks, and right now he's been, you know, he had 7 or 8 last year. He has 0 through 3 games, and I know they come in bunches, but they definitely need to start more often. The more guys that can get involved up front, the more painful it becomes to double and triple team Mac on the other side of the football. So, you know, I was going to pick somebody different, but actually, or I was going to pick Bruce Irvin as well. I think that he is the key to this whole thing in the secondary as well. Just to, you know, bring out somebody else, is David Amerson has been in position, has been close to making plays, and just, I mean, he has a couple touchdowns that he almost knocked down but didn't, but in his line of work almost isn't good enough, and
one big play can ruin
a whole day. So to see him come up with a big play as opposed to just missing one, he's right there.
Yeah.
He needs to get over the hump here, but you're right though, Fallon. Ultimately, when you have a quarterback that has played well but still isn't an established NFL signal caller, rattle that guy, because don't want to let Sanders and Thomas do their thing downfield and create havoc, because they can do that if they have the ball anywhere in their vicinity. The ball needs to stay in the backfield.
And as all the players always say, and coaches, rush and coverage work together.
Work together, just like Fallon and Scott working together every single week on the Raiders Insider Podcast.
It's so hard to do it far away from you because I don't want to interrupt you. And then, anyway, we got through it.
Well, just like we do every week, you guys can tune into Raiders Central on NBC Sports Bay Area in California. It premieres generally on Thursday at 9:30. Always a key interview and lots of stats and breakdowns from both of us. And so just set your DVRs.
Yeah.
So it's always there waiting for you whenever you're ready to watch some serious Raiders coverage. So Fallon, thank you so much for joining me on this episode. And now we are moving on to our feature interview with Raiders inside linebacker Nicholas Morrow. I'm here with Raiders linebacker Nicholas Morrow. As you guys well know, undrafted rookie out of Greenville College, and I won't blame you if you had to look that up on a map. But now he's here, and not only is he here, but he's an active member, active productive member of this Raiders defense. Nick, for the first 3 weeks, you've seen your defensive snaps take a rise each time as you're getting more involved. Given that you're in your third game now, given that you're playing more and you're getting used to it, has kind of the awe of being in the NFL, like, has that worn off yet? Is it all kind of business at this point?
I mean, it's definitely all business. You want to get in your playbook and get in your film study and talk to your coach as much as possible, but you're still in awe. You're playing against guys that you used to watch on TV, and now you're competing against them. So, yeah, that definitely doesn't go away, I don't think.
Take me back to your first game then. Greenville College, it's been well documented. Really lots of good stories about your, you know, like how you got to this place.
Yeah.
And Greenville would draw what?
Like maybe 100, 200.
Okay, maybe 100, 200. Then you go to Nissan Stadium in Nashville, it's drawn 70. And I was looking it up, your hometown in Huntsville, I don't know where your parents live now, but your hometown in Huntsville is only a couple hours away.
Yeah.
Did you have family among that 70,000? Yeah. And what was that experience like?
That's pretty cool. I think I was telling my parents after the game, like, you pass by this spot maybe 1,000 times because I used to go to St. Louis. Anytime you go to Greenville, you go past Nashville.
Right.
I have family that live in Nashville, actually, so I passed by the stadium, you know, a lot of times. My first time being in it, I was playing in it, so that was definitely
your first
awesome.
Time being in it?
That was my first time ever being in the stadium, so that was a pretty awesome feeling.
You know, when you first signed here, I know you went on a pre-draft visit with the Raiders and things like that, but if you think about it, you're from a D3 school, you know, undrafted. You missed a portion of the off-season program because of Greenville's academic calendar.
Right.
So that's right or wrong. debate, but when you came in, it seems like an uphill climb. You know, you're the only undrafted guy to make the roster. At what point, was there a point during the summer where you thought, maybe there's a chance here, maybe I can make this happen?
I don't know, man. I think the whole time my whole mindset was just do the best that I possibly could do to make the decision hard on these coaches and the scouts to cut me. So I just wanted to make sure I did everything I possibly could do to make the team and to make another team if this team didn't work out. So
you probably didn't look at this as a milestone, but I remember I think it was like early August. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, I looked on the practice field in Napa, and I'm like, number 35 is with the first unit.
Yeah.
And then he's making some plays with the first unit.
Yeah.
Did that mean anything to you, kind of jumping up and playing with starters? At least they wanted to evaluate the practice tape of you against those guys.
I mean, yeah, definitely valued. I mean, like when I first got in here, man, I was the last group. So, you know, saying to take that long uphill battle, man, you definitely you think about it a little bit, but then you realize you got a lot more work to do. So
this team has a history, or let me rephrase. There's a lot of guys in this locker room next to us that are undrafted guys that have made it from small schools. Mm-hmm. James Kauser, Southern Utah. Seth Roberts, Western Alabama. Yeah. Jalen Richard, Southern Miss. Did any of those guys have any words of encouragement after you made the roster beforehand to be like, hey, it's possible if you just do everything?
I mean, I had one after that practice, after one of the practices, I was with the first group, Jalen, and me and Jalen were talking, just a little quick conversation, walking back to the locker room, and he was telling me about how his process went and how he got in there and stuff like that. So, yeah, I definitely listened to what he said and, you know, tried to apply some of the stuff that he talked about. So
there was definitely some buzz about you during the preseason, and I remember, I think it was the third or the fourth game, must have been the fourth game, I guess. Some people from Greenville College came out and like interviewed you.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I've spoken to their athletic director, who called me right back, and they're obviously very proud and excited. I think the first guy from the school that ever signed an NFL contract. Right. What's the reaction been like there?
Yeah, I haven't been back since, but I get a lot of Facebook messages. A lot of people that I played against or went to school with, they add me on Facebook now. A lot of text messages and Snapchat, so they seem pretty excited.
Yeah, I kind of know how you ended up at Greenville, but for the Raiders fans listening here, and they see you play now, you think, that guy's a Power 5 player. How'd you end up at a school like that?
For 3 years when I was in high school, I played offensive line.
Yeah.
So my senior year, they moved me to receiver and outside linebacker. I actually got a concussion like the last couple of games, so I missed the last couple of games. So I only had like 7 games of tape, maybe, me playing outside linebacker. And I was underweight, undersized, so no one really took a shot on me. Greenville was the only shot I had and took it, and it just went from there.
And so I've got to ask, you're still not the biggest guy in the world or the biggest guy in this locker room.
Right.
And you see offensive line. I know they played a spread at your high school system. Right, but, you know, you look – I guess, how were you as an offensive lineman?
I was all right, man. I was in space mainly, so I was just blocking in space. So pulling, stuff like that, you know, getting on linebackers, people who were kind of my size. So.
Did you feel at home when you made the switch, especially on defense?
No, not at first, man. It was really weird. It was different. I went from blocking people to trying to get off blocks and tackle. So it was a little different. And covering, you know what I mean? Like, no offensive lineman covers him, man. So the coverage part was kind of weird, too. But after a while, yeah, definitely came comfortable with it.
When you were at Greenville, you played this kind of hybrid sort of role, and they kind of built a defense around you in this kind of safety linebacker thing.
Yeah.
That's sort of what you're doing here. When you took your pre-draft visit, when I'm sure they were recruiting you to sign here as opposed to other places, did they say, hey, you're going to be a really good scheme fit if you
– Yeah, I mean, they tell me about how they use me and where I could fit in, possibly play in their system for sure.
And when you're at Green, like when you started kind of generating some buzz, I think, as a junior, really, any thoughts of maybe I'm going to go somewhere else?
Not afterwards. Definitely before. I wouldn't say afterwards. Afterwards, I was like, man, if I go anywhere else, then they have to follow me and all that kind of stuff. But before, I definitely thought about maybe going somewhere else. But just the community that I built with those guys that were in the locker room and the guys that I was living with kept me there.
Yeah, I always finish these things with three sort of offbeat questions. So pardon me. Number one is, if you weren't going to be like a football player, like when you grow up, like what was your other idea or passion? Yeah. Or what did you want to?
A chiropractor.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I actually went to school for it.
Oh, really?
Biology. So.
So you're already kind of on the way there.
Yeah.
That's the way it goes. So it sounds like you're on Snapchat and Facebook. I didn't see any Twitter.
I'm not on Twitter or Instagram. No.
So, and there are no blue check marks, I'm
no.
sure. No. There's so many people that do that. Do you like kind of take a step back from all that? You know,
Are
really public.
Yeah. When I was talking to one of the guys on the team, he was talking about how they treated him on Twitter and Facebook. Yeah. I was like, no, I'm good, man.
If they don't treat me well, sometimes you're a little high profile. And then the last one. Did you ever have like a pinch yourself moment, whether, I don't know, you're lining up against X guy, or you took a private jet, or you're wearing an, like, was there anything over the past 6 months or so?
That's a good question.
okay, like this is pretty cool. I'm
sure yeah, you're talking out probably the first time I flew out to, well, not the first time I had my visit, but the first time I flew out for rookie mini camp was like, oh snap, this is real. Yeah. Like this is about to really happen. So that's probably it.
It's real. It's happening. Yeah. Nicholas Morrow, and a productive, impactful part of this defense. Thank you very much for the time. Best of luck against Denver and throughout the rest of the season.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
The Raiders Insider Podcast.